This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
Well, here we are smack dab in the middle of winter, but my thoughts are wandering to what I'll be doing in the garden come spring. One thing we can all do right now is prepare things that you will use in the garden come spring. Nigel Palmer just recently spoke at the Regenerative Agriculture Weekend up in Rhode Island, and I thought you might be inspired to try some of the easy-to-do techniques he has honed to help your soil and yields. So my guest is Nigel Palmer, who has written a book called The Regenerative Grower's Guide to Garden Amendments, using locally sourced materials to make mineral and biological extracts and ferments. Nigel Palmer has been a lifelong gardener in New England, relying on the amazing complexity of nature to inspire his gardening philosophy. He is the instructor and curriculum developer of the Sustainable Regenerative Gardening Program at the Institute of Sustainable Nutrition. Welcome, Nigel.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin.
I've been reading your book, and wow, there's lots to take in. Tell us why you wrote this book. How long was it in the making, and who is it really for?
You know, those are great questions. I started teaching at the Institute of Sustainable Nutrition, and in that process, put together a package of information for each program class that I taught. And that's one of the things that engineers do, is they put together packages of information. And after the course of 7 years, I had many of these packages, and they became rather refined. So I thought that it would be a good idea to put them into a book. I had that goal from the beginning, and when it actually came to fruition, that was quite a surprise. The target audience is everybody that works in a garden. One of the things I recognized about the recipes that I was finding and using and making was not only did they work, but they were relatively simple. They were sustainable. They were regenerative. They were cheap. And for some reason, they were not readily available to the masses. And I felt that this sort of recipe book was extremely important to everybody. And it needed to get out there for a whole bunch of different reasons. So the target audience is anybody that wants to put a seed in the ground and watch it grow. It's been quite a journey. I think it's taken me at least 10 years to finally put it together, and about 2 years of relatively concerted efforts to actually get the book into good shape. And I must say, I thank Chelsea Green for their efforts in putting together such a nice book.
So, can a neophyte get as much out of this as the sophisticated gardener? And also, can like an urban and suburban gardener figure out ways of using your recipes?
Absolutely. One of the precepts of the book is the idea of a plant model. And there are all kinds of plant models, from the simple plant model of just putting a seed in the ground and watching it grow. I mean, this actually works. It actually works very well. And even in some urban environments, you can see those dandelions poking their way out of the cracks in the sidewalk. So you can grow food anywhere. You can grow just about anything anywhere if you try. And the quality of the food is really the difference between the different models. Once you start understanding the value of the soil biology and the different flows of sap through a plant and how plants get nutrition, then these models become more sophisticated, and you can grow higher quality food. And the contents of the book, the recipes are laid out so that anybody can follow them. And some of the recipes are extremely simple, simply adding organic apple cider vinegar to eggshells, for instance. I mean, anybody can do that very simply. And then some of the recipes are a little bit more complex. And there are other recipes that aren't in the book that are available out there that are even more complex still. So yeah, the whole pretense is to try and make it so that anybody can access the material and use it as a starting point and continue to grow and learn. Growing food is one of the most mindful things that we can do, I think, and offers a great respite from some of the difficulties in the world around us. So
let's, before we get to recipes and how-to and philosophy a bit, let's go over a couple terms that I'm interested in the book. Let's start with, what is a regenerative grower?
Yeah, that's great. Regenerative, in my opinion, is actually regenerating the ecosystem in the soil. A lot of our soils are replete of minerals. They've been beat up by whether it be commercial agricultural techniques or construction, or they just never really had the plentiful minerals and biology that they needed from the beginning. And so regenerative refers to regenerating that soil and regenerating, more importantly, the ecosystem in the soil, the biology in the soil, and also adding minerals to meet a level of mineralization that plants can thrive in. So in the process of growing food, it's important to be able to improve the soil as you go rather than deplete the soil as you go. So a lot of the techniques listed in the book allow for regenerating the soil, to improving the soil year after year as you plant and pull vegetables or fruits from it.
And how is that different from sustainable gardening?
So sustainable, it requires something to be at a level that is worth sustaining. So if you have soil that's replete in minerals and biology, there's no sense sustaining that situation. So you have to regenerate the soil and get it into a place where everything is balanced and nice and thriving. And then you can start talking about sustaining that point of view. Specifically, when it comes to amendments, the amendments that are listed in my book are sustainable in that they essentially use either waste or things in the backyard that are going to keep growing, whether it be a plant or shells from a restaurant that would otherwise be thrown away. So sustaining is important to recognize that you got to have something worth sustaining before you start sustaining it.
So let's talk about some of these things you bring up in your book. I mean, let's define the terms so people understand what you're talking about. What are extracts, ferments, and amendments?
So extracts are extracting minerals from a specific product, and the menstruums for extraction that I key on are the leaf mold biology in the forest, and probably the easiest one to grasp is the vinegar that I just mentioned, where if you take an oyster shell and you crush it up, cook it a little bit, get all the biology and the water out of it, and then add vinegar to it, you are extracting the minerals from that eggshell through the action of the weak acids in the vinegar. Ferments, on the other hand, are indulging the fermentation process to get minerals out of something. For instance, a fermented plant juice, where you're using organic brown sugar to ferment perhaps stinging nettle over about a week's time frame and drawing minerals and other constituents from that plant into a shelf-stable form. And then amendments are all of these things that are extracted or fermented that you apply to a plant or a soil, either by a foliar spray or a drench.
And you say making the drench or the foliar spray, you should use, you call good water. Define good water for me.
Yeah, that's a great question. All water is not created equally. And I think water is one of the most fascinating subjects that any young person could possibly delve into. Never a boring moment. Yeah, I talk about good water, and good water is, by my definition, is rainwater. And rainwater doesn't have carbonates and other constituents in it, which will limit the effectiveness of a foliar spray. And so rainwater is something that I collect and use for my gardening as much as I possibly can. Tap water from a municipality is often treated with many different chemicals, and those chemicals will influence a plant. Once you start understanding that the minerals you apply to a plant influence a plant, then it's easy to understand how chlorine may not be the best thing in the world for biological systems. And there are many other additives that come out of the tap. So there's a broad spectrum of quality of water, and it's important to understand what the quality of water you have. In some cases, you have what you have and you get what you get, and that's all there is to it, and you don't have many choices. But understanding those limitations is an important aspect of growing food.
I'm speaking with Nigel Palmer. He has a new book out. It's a terrific resource, I think. The Regenerative Grower Guide to Garden Amendments talks about all kinds of great stuff and gives how-tos, basically, on charts and different recipes. So I think it's really interesting. When I first saw recipes, I go, the food we're growing, we're going to have how to cook it up on the stove? No, this is recipes for making stuff to put into your soil, and there's a lot of them. Tell us a little bit about how many recipes are there in the book, and go over a couple of the charts in brief.
So there's I don't really know how many recipes there are, probably a dozen or more. And I restricted the recipes to some of the more simple ones that are available or I came across. Indigenous people have been growing high quality food for a very long time on the same space over and over again. And in order to do that, in order to propagate a healthy civilization, they have to do this in a regenerative and sustaining way. So it was clear that these recipes were out there. It was just a matter of trying to find them. The most simple recipe is taking a plant and putting it in a bucket and filling it with water and watch it decompose. This is very informative, especially after 2 weeks when it smells extremely terribly. The plants, by the way, they don't care about the smell of the water. They like the breaking down of nutrients in that bucket. So it starts there, and then some of the other recipes, we talked about vinegar extraction. Many of us used vinegar to extract minerals from eggshells in elementary school and watched that bubbling action take place, and we oohed and aahed at it and wondered about it. So there's a very simple way of extracting minerals. And then there's some more complicated ones in making IMO4, which is a Korean natural farming product, which I learned about from a couple of Korean natural farming books, which really changed my life. They were real eye-openers for me. And they get a little bit more complex, take a little bit more time, but they're not overly difficult. It's just a matter of walking through the recipe, just like baking a cake. You follow the recipe and you get to the end, and all of a sudden you have yourself a pretty outstanding cake.
You know, the one that I found really interesting was the leaf mold fermentation. You in the book you say this defines sustainability: rainwater, weeds, and leaf molds. Why don't you tell us about that one, since we're looking for a place to start?
So that one's really good indeed. Leaf mold represents the biology in your local area, both its ubiquitousness and numbers and varieties of biology. And it's so simple to make. It's so accessible to anybody. And it is a biological concoction that, when applied to your soil, will change it instantly. It just provides the soil with such a shot of both bacteria, fungus, and chia that it just opens up the soil and does amazing things. Also, that leaf mold can be used as a fermentation product. You can actually use that bucket of plant matter with rainwater and put a handful of that leaf mold biology in it, and it will ferment and break down those minerals to provide a wonderful extraction that can be used for amending a soil as a foliar spray or a drench. So it's so simple and so cheap and so accessible. It's really a great place to start. And it can be as sophisticated as you want it to be, depending on how you use it and how often you use it and things like that. So again, these are just amazing tools that for some reason have not been made accessible to us in the past.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing you say is that there's nothing new under the sun, really. You're just rediscovering some stuff that indigenous people, different cultures have used over the years a lot, right?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true.
And, you know, as a point, like I have my cousin Marcus from Clady, Ireland on here, and because he's a big gardener, I said, well, there's something in the gene pool there, you know, so I had him on my program. And he says he soaks comfrey and thistle in rainwater to produce a drench for his plants that he uses and has been using his whole life. He said, yep. So this is the kind of thing we're talking about, right? There's a little Irish potion that they've been using.
Absolutely. And if you look at Rudolf Steiner's work with biodynamics, these are other methods of taking these really high quality nutritive herbs and preparing them for garden use.
Hmm. So what other things are like that? Yeah, give us another example of something that was like maybe considered like an ancient practice, but is something that we can find in your book and start using ourselves in our gardens?
Well, so let's go simple. I like to stay simple. Making your own apple cider vinegar is a really great start. Settlers, homesteaders, people of the past, they'd take off and go to wherever they went with a pocketful of apple seeds. These apple seeds, each apple seed produces a unique apple tree. They're not by any means the same, but in fact, you get an apple, and that apple not only is perhaps palatable to eat, but most importantly, you can ferment it and make a vinegar product that can be used in the household as a disinfectant and also as an extractor for getting minerals out of things. So there's a really, really simple idea that we could all adopt. Most of us know where there's an apple tree kicking around, and it's certainly easy enough to plant one if you wanted to. And there's an absolutely wonderful resource available to us that people of the past recognized and used readily that for some reason we seem to have forgotten its benefits.
Hmm. You know, in your book, you talk really highly, very favorably about weeds. Why do you do that? I mean, why weeds in particular?
Yeah. Well, weeds, there's a whole bunch of reasons. First off is weeds are nature's mineralization program. When you disturb soil or soil that is minerally deficient grows plants, those plants that are growing are often called weeds. And these are plants that will grow in environments that are minerally deficient. And what the plant is doing is bringing minerals up to the surface and dying annually and laying those minerals onto the surface. And over time, they will be changing the mineral consistencies of the soil that the plants grow in. So the weed itself will have a different mineral composition in the plant than it does in the soil because they are mineral accumulators of specific minerals. So on the one hand, weeds represent this remineralization program that nature has put forth. So it's well worth paying attention to that and understanding that, understanding which weeds grow where and why. In fact, there's reference books in my book that list authors that have identified or are able to identify the types of minerals in a soil by observing the weeds that grow there. In fact, as I've stumbled down this road, I hear more and more experienced farmers that are able to understand what goes on in the soil by the weeds that grow there. The other thing about weeds, specifically weeds like stinging nettle, which is absolutely my favorite, is they're some of the most healthy foods that we have available to eat. They are huge mineral accumulators. They're broad spectrum mineral accumulators, and they're extremely healthy to eat. And they represent, at least in my opinion, one of the best food sources available, specifically as the quality of the food that is grown and purchased in a store continues to decline.
So you say, you know, like eating purslane and stinging nettle, dandelions, that's really a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. And if you ever made a pesto with purslane in it, I think you'd agree that not only is it a great source of omega-3s, but it's also tastes really good.
I haven't done that. I have to try it. I've got a big plant growing in my tomato garden right now.
It's amazing that a lot of people have purslane growing in their garden. And the first thing is they try and weed it out. Of course, where the way they weed it out awfully propagates it unknowingly to most. But secondly, it's such a great food source.
So before we move on, you're taking these weeds, chopping them up, putting, let's say in simple terms, I know this is a little more complex than this, but you're putting them in water and you're soaking them and you're getting that drench. And you say you can put it aside and keep it. I mean, do we have to refrigerate this? I mean, how do you store this kind of stuff? What kind of shelf life are we talking about?
Yeah. So it's fermented plant juices that become a shelf stable product. So if you cut up the weeds, let's talk stinging nettle. If you cut up the stinging nettle leaf and stalk and weigh out an equal amount of organic brown sugar and mix that up and put it in a jar or a crock or something and let it ferment for about a week per the recipe in the book. And then after a week, you strain it out, you're going to get a liquid, and that liquid is shelf stable. That'll sit on a shelf. I store my ferments in the basement. on a shelf out of the sun, well ventilated, constant temperature, and then that product will stay on the shelf and be shelf stable for years. Also, when you consider the dilution rates of 500 or 1,000 to 1 of those products, it's quickly recognized that a quart or a pint of that material is going to last you a very long time.
Very interesting. So, you know, on Digging in the Dirt, we talk a lot about soil biology and gut biology. And I know you have an opinion about that. But your book, Regenerative Grower, goes a bit further and highlights the importance of local biology. I mean, it's really important to you about getting local biology and putting it back into the soil. So why is that so important? Why, explain to us why local biology as opposed to getting it from somewhere else or from a bottle or from spore?
Yeah, well, so the biology in any specific soil is unique to that soil. An easy example to understand would be if I have a certain soil biology at the base of a mountain, it's going to have certain constituents of certain proportions, and it will thrive and grow with a specific set of plants. Well, if you climb that mountain and go up 5,000 feet or 4,000 feet or something like that, or even a couple thousand feet, that biology and the plants that grow at that higher elevation are going to change. And so they'll change whether you're on the north or south side of that mountain. They'll change whether you're in the shade or in the sun. So it's clear that biology is location specific. So when you purchase a biology, it may or may not be something that will thrive and be helpful in a local environment. But if you capture the local biology, you're assured that it is indigenous and it is the stuff that will want to thrive in your garden.
Let's address difficulty in time. I mean, somebody out there listening right now may go, whoa, I don't know. This sounds like more time than I have or maybe more difficult to do this. Can you address that to somebody out there listening about the, oh man, I don't know. This is a lot of work.
Yeah. So when I first started gardening, I was pretty young and I'd take seeds and we'd grow a row of stuff and we'd weed every now and then and we'd get food out of it. And it was a thrill. It was an absolute thrill. And as time went on, I recognized the importance of finding and having good quality food. So I think the first thing to think about is time well spent in the garden is a health program. We're talking about a health program here. We're not talking about a luxury for me anymore. This is where we find good quality food. The other thing, I call it garden time. I think the garden has great lessons about time. Things don't happen overnight often, and things they take time to progress. And when one starts growing a garden, even if it's a small 10 by 10 plot with a couple of tomatoes in it, there's a nurturing that takes place, not only the garden nurturing the plants and the soil, but I think you'll find, most people find that the garden provides a nurture to the gardener as well. And so I think that these are way of lives that we used to live and we perhaps have forgotten. And so I think the time spent in the garden is reciprocating not only for us to do something positive to the soil and the plants, but I think they give back in ways that most people begin to realize when they do start that 10 by 10 plot.
I think you're right. You're preaching to the choir here. You know, the other bookend of that is that you say in your book, the rich diversity of a healthy soil ecology usually keeps your pests and disease under control. And rather than add a fungicide to kill a target pathogen, which may deleteriously affect other aspects of the soil ecosystem in unknown ways, it is more effective to add vast numbers and varieties of local biology to the ecosystem. I like that.
Yeah, you know, that's the same with society, too. Once we have a thriving, diverse society, the pathogens in our society don't have much of a leg to hold on to. And it's the same in the garden. The quote-unquote pathogens, the bad pathogens, there's no such thing as bad pathogens. They're just out of control, that's all. And so when we talk about bad pathogens, I think of more of a balance rather than a bad. Those bad things have somehow gotten an upper leg and are thriving. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're eating the bad leaves, the unhealthy leaves or whatever it might be.
Yeah, we're a little bit out of balance around the world right now.
Something like that, Kevin.
So, yeah, we're talking to Nigel Palmer. He's the author of a new book out on Chelsea Green Publishing. It's called The Regenerative Grower Guide to Garden Amendments, Using Locally Sourced Materials to Make Mineral and Biological Extracts and Ferments. I like this book. I thought it was going to be a little bit denser and harder to grasp than it turned out to be. You know, it's a great resource that I know I think I'm going to be referring to. You even mentioned that in the book, you hope that it gets worn and covered in tomato juice and things like that. Yeah. Because, you know, it is something that you can go back and say, oh, what did he say? You know, how do I do that? You know, that's the kind of book I think it is, you know. It's a good job, you know. You should be proud of it, Nigel.
Thank you.
You know, let's finish off with this. I like the idea that you say it's important for the gardener to be a participant in the garden ecosystem and not a bystander.
Yeah, it's true. It's, I think there are many people will quote that the most important thing to put into a garden is your feet.
I like that. Well, thank you for joining me here today on Digging in the Dirt.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today, Kevin.
Take care.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.